Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, the Central Valley is experiencing some of the worst air quality recorded at levels not seen for more than a decade. What does it mean for your health, and is there anything we can do about it? Also, the fight to save funding for the new veterans home being built in Fresno, and how a home energy upgrade is saving a local family lots of money. But we began with a health hazard that impacts everyone in the Central Valley, dirty air. A dry winter has stagnated air across the valley, causing conditions that has produced the worst air quality recorded in a while, with nearly every day in December being a bad air day. Here to discuss what this means for our health and what we can do about it is Jamie Holt with the San Joaquin Valley Air District, Dr. John Gassman, pulmonologist and chief of Kaiser Permanente's critical care unit, and Bonnie Holmes-Jen, executive director, air quality and public health, the American Lung Association. Thank you all for joining us today to discuss this very important issue.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, Jamie, let's start with you. Let's kind of explain the conditions that we've seen over the past 2 months, and what makes this kind of pollution so bad?
Well, Juanita, you got it right. Since really the first few days of December, we have had a weather pattern, and it hasn't just been over the valley. It's been also impacting Sacramento and the Bay Area that has basically meant that the pollution we create here in the valley, and during the winter it's actually particulate matter pollution, it really has had no opportunity to be pushed out of the valley. So we've seen this pollution build up day after day after day. It comes from a variety of sources, be it fireplaces, cars, some of the industrial operations that we have throughout the valley. And it has a major health impact on the folks who live here in the valley. So hopefully going into this weekend, we're going to see a little bit of an improvement. But really, we've had some of the worst air quality, as you said, that we've had in nearly over a decade.
When you say, is it just really the weather pattern that's causing this?
Well, don't get me wrong. We create this pollution. Now, the fact that it has built up for so many days in a row is due to the fact that we haven't really had any help from the weather. Many people know, most of your listeners probably know, that we are a perfect petri dish for trapping and creating pollution. We get this inversion layer that keeps the pollution very close to the ground. It doesn't disperse or mix vertically. And then the fact that we're surrounded by mountains. In the winter, we just have a really difficult time with any of this pollution moving out of the valley. And that's the problem right now. You add to it that there are more and more people moving to the valley, more and more miles being driven by cars in the valley. And unfortunately, even though we've been telling people don't do it, we have quite a few people who've been using their fireplace during this very cold winter. So all those things in combination have made a very unhealthy environment here in the valley.
Dr. Gassman, isn't this kind of pollution, we're talking about, the small particulate kind of pollution, isn't it some of the worst when it comes to our health?
It affects a number of sensitive groups, people with chronic health conditions. Cardiac, the most common chronic health condition, leading cause of death in the United States, is heart disease. And heart patients can be impacted by particulate pollution. And then, of course, people with respiratory problems like asthma and COPD, which is emphysema.
It is really, and you all can try to answer this, it's really just curtailing the outdoor activity and telling people not to go outside and not to burn their wood in their fireplaces. Are those actions really enough when the air is like this?
Well, and I'm sure the doctor would concur. The big thing that we want people to take away is they need to protect themselves. Really, the impact is most often seen outside, and actually during the winter, because of how our inversion layer works, our worst air quality is usually seen during the evening hours, overnight, and into the morning. What happens is, as the temperature drops, that inversion layer gets closer to the ground, and the density of pollution actually closer to the ground increases. So if you're one of those folks, and even if you're maybe not in the sensitive group category, but you're one of those folks that likes to go out for a early morning run before the sun even comes up, you probably have experienced over the past month difficulty breathing, maybe a little bit of a sore throat, maybe some irritation in your nose or your eyes. And everyone, even if you're not one of those sensitive groups, really needs to be paying attention. And if you're going to go do anything, type of exertion outside, look for the best time of the day, which during the winter is actually around 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, you know, what happens if we keep breathing this? I mean, we do have reports about how this is adversely impacting people's health. And, we've had this problem for a number of years, and sometimes it's worse. But if you have people breathing this all the time, I mean, what happens?
There are some long-term chronic effects, both in quality of life and health effect. We have a higher incidence of asthma in this community in the Fresno Air Basin than the national average, which is about 9 to 10%. And here it's probably 12 to 15%. A much higher percentage of our school-age children are suffering with asthma. It's very common to see kids with inhalers on the playgrounds. When you have bad air, your chronic, possibly controlled asthma is more likely to fall out of control. You can lead to exacerbations. It can lead to unplanned visits to the doctor or the emergency department. And rarely asthma can be a fatal disease, which is tragic because it's always preventable with good management. Avoiding triggers is a key part of asthma management, and pollution is a trigger. Avoiding the air you live in is obviously a huge challenge. And so the ongoing efforts to clean up the air is a good way to prevent health decrement in that population I've been talking about, asthma, but then take chronic obstructive lung disease patients, cardiac patients who can have heart attacks, angina, shortness of breath, again, have to curtail activities or have an exacerbation of their illness that puts them in the hospital, in the emergency department, or in the doctor's office in an unplanned fashion.
I'd like to bring in Bonnie Holmes-Ginn with the American Lung Association. What have your studies shown when it comes to the kind of air pollution we have here?
Well, we completely agree with the comments that have previously been made. I mean, the Valley has a very difficult air pollution problem, very serious problem of asthma in the Valley. Very high rates of asthma among children, and the pollution, the kind of pollution that people are breathing in the Valley, can actually help to slow lung development in children, and this is a big concern also. Studies have shown that children that live in areas with high levels of pollution tend to have stunted lung development, and of course, these underpowered lungs tend to predispose the children as they grow into adults to have lung illnesses and lung problems. So there is a huge, huge focus from our organization on preventing pollution emissions, and we strongly encourage people in the Valley and other areas of the state to, pay attention to the to their own activities and how they contribute to pollution, to reduce driving where they can, to pay attention to the alerts, to not burn wood in fireplaces, and to support local and state laws that are going to reduce pollution. There's very important law that's going to be considered at the end of this month at the State Air Board that's going to ratchet down further on vehicle pollution and actually require increased numbers of zero-emission vehicles. We have laws to reduce the pollution from diesel trucks and buses. Diesel is also a huge source of the particle pollution that creates problems in the Valley. So there's a lot that people can do, and we want to emphasize that.
You know, with that in mind, when we take a look at the kind of health problems we face here, when we take a look at the kind of conditions, we'd like to pose this question to our listeners as well. Do you think we are doing enough to clean up our air? Do you believe there are other things we could possibly do? We'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-224-8989. Or 559-275-8989 or online at kvpr.org. So in light of that, are we doing enough? Because there are some people who say, you know, that the Valier District has focused a lot of attention on banning wood fireplaces and not looking at some of our other sources of pollution, like dairies, feedlots, you know, and that sort of thing.
Well, all of those things you just mentioned are heavily regulated by the Valley Air District. And what I always say when folks pose this question is I kick it back to them and say, okay, what are you personally doing? Every single one of us who live in this valley, because we have these challenges that are unmatched by any other place in the nation, we are all creating pollution, every single one of us, whether it's that we're driving around when maybe we could be walking, we could be riding a bike. We still, unfortunately, have a lot of folks that are using their wood fireplace on days when it's a no-burn day. We've been giving out a lot of tickets this past season. So can we do more? Yeah. As a community, I think every single one of us needs to be doing a whole bunch more if we're going to reach the goals that we need to be reaching to have clean air in this valley.
Well, part of it is the public. You mentioned those citations. And I know I recently read a letter to the editor, and the writer was complaining about not being able to use his fireplace. And he didn't want the government telling him when he could or could not burn. So, you know, we do also face those kind of attitudes,
right,
and that you're trying to put restrictions on wood burning and on diesels, and there's a lot of resistance. People don't want to change.
Right, and the bottom line is we live in a valley that's also fairly economically challenged, and we don't want to run business and industry out of this valley. We have a lot of folks that, in all honesty, putting food on their table is a priority ahead of air quality, and we understand that there are a lot of people that maybe don't have the money to really lose another job in the family. So we don't want those jobs being run out of the valley, but it's a balancing act, and that's what we're always trying to do.
And can I just add that in terms of using fireplaces, I mean, people need to understand that curtailing wood burning is a public health issue, and the Valley Air District is issuing these alerts and saying check before you burn because they're trying to protect public health. These particles from wood burning can literally shorten lives. They create life and death emergencies, send people to hospitals and emergency rooms, and cause asthma attacks in the high percentage of children that do have asthma in the valley. So this is all about public health. And when people are refraining from burning, they're protecting their own lungs and the people and the lungs of those around them. It's really a huge public health issue, and we need to message that more so people understand it.
Okay, we have Matthew. Matthew, your question.
Hi, my health club in Bakersfield for years has had a problem with our natural gas boiler that makes steam for our steam room, and it's real expensive to fix. So we got up a collection, like almost $11,000, to buy a new one. And when we did, we found out we could not buy one because as of January 1st, the particulate matter dropped for natural gas boilers from 30 parts per million to 20 parts per million, and that no boiler sold in California could now meet those standards. So is that true, and can we get a waiver, or what should we do?
In that case, I don't know the exact specifics of the boiler requirements in California, but I will tell you that if you call our Bakersfield office and ask to talk to someone in our permits department, and I'm trying to remember that number off the top of my head, but it's the Valley Air District there in Bakersfield. They can kind of walk you through the process and see what your options are. So they can definitely help you out.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Matthew. I hope we answered your question. We also have Jack from Fresno. Jack, your question?
Hi. Listen, you know, question and point. First of all, there are two major sources of pollution that were not mentioned among the sources of pollution. In fact, it's my understanding, and this is based on a study of air quality in the valley done by the Delta Group from UC Davis. And wood burning, although it's important, is not the most important issue. The two most important issues, number one, is the emissions from the oil.
I think we lost him, and hopefully he will call back and we can finish that discussion. But he was talking about.
And I think he has a point. He was, maybe, if I'm a mind reader, was going to talk about the oil industry down in Kern County. And I will tell you that the oil industry down in Kern County is heavily regulated. If you talk to folks down there, and then I grew up in the Oklahoma, Texas area of the country, and then you compare that with what folks in the Texas area can get away with. I think they would say that in California, it's a whole different playing field as far as regulations that they have to abide by. And I would say overall, there are a variety of different sources. One of the challenges, though, is that during the winter, particulate matter is our main focus. In the summer, it's a different pollutant. It's ozone, and those sources are a little bit different. But in the winter, it's particulate matter, and it's particulate matter. It's of a certain size. It's smaller particulate matter, and wood burning is a huge impact on that. Fortunately, we're improving. We don't see the pollution to be quite as bad from wood burning as it was before our wood burning rule took effect, but it is still an issue.
But I think some of the concern is that we do have restrictions, but, and I understand it's an expensive to change these things over, but we give the companies, the organizations, the entities a while before they have to comply. And I think that's what some people might be having the question about. In the meantime, we're all kind of suffering here from this air.
In most cases, at least at the Valley Air District, they're usually fairly quick timelines. Once a rule's passed, they might have 30 days to comply. They do have to, these are usually millions of dollars worth of equipment that you can't go and buy off the shelf. So in some cases, it does involve giving them a little bit of time to put this type of equipment on their facility. Even with the wood burning rule, the first year of the wood burning rule, we did allow people to learn a little bit about it, even though they were members of the public, and educate them. So, we like to work with folks and get them on board with solving air quality problems rather than ostracizing them and making them not want to be a part of the solution.
Okay, we have Elizabeth from North Fork. Elizabeth, your question?
Oh, hi. Thanks for the discussion. This is very important. And I welcome everything that everyone said, but I would like to add, if we could, bringing in, as that other gentleman was trying to suggest, some other of our main sources. It seems like I understand that if there's a whole lot of fire places going, for instance, in Oakhurst in the middle of winter, you can see that there is a pool of smoke at the bottom. But just sort of, it seems to me that we're demonizing wood burning. I, for instance, live in a very poor community where all the wood that we burn is locally derived. So the wood will either burn in a wildfire in the summer or it will burn in a fireplace in the winter. And I would just like to suggest that as we try to help people come up with, for instance, solar, which would offset their need for wood, in the meantime, what's making everything terrible in the Valley, in my experience, is there are certain things people cannot do. This telling people that they all have to do, what are you doing? I mean, if you have a society that does things like give tax breaks to enormous corporations to put Walmarts out on the edge of town so that people have to drive there, because we also have a society which refuses to put mass transit in place, and we also have a society which allows one of the biggest money makers for private people in Fresno County, developers are springing up cities on the edge of town still, even in this economy. Those people can't take mass transit anywhere. They have to drive. Why would we have a society that allows developers, huge corporate farms, where I see people having to drive their tractors at 25 miles per hour and till the soil in the middle of winter, and I can tell you, the clouds of soot and dust and particulate matter also that's laced with herbicides coming out of that are enormous. So if you wouldn't mind discussing these things which society is currently mandating that the people can do nothing about, like tax breaks for big companies on the edge of town, tax breaks, not making the developers include mass transit when they have big edge cities and bedroom communities, and corporate farms where they're so huge, the workers are forced to put clouds of soil up in the air every day. If you'd like to discuss those, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, she does have some legitimate questions, because those are all things that we face here, especially in an area where you are a developing area.
And, you know, the Valley Air District, and even myself personally, I agree wholeheartedly with a lot of the questions and the statements that you made. I actually have the pleasure of sitting on the Fresno City Planning Commission, and I'm very concerned with the development patterns that have been going on actually valley-wide over about the past 30 years. And one of the kind of innovative things that the Valley Air District did about 3 years ago is they passed a rule called the Indirect Source Review Rule. It's rule number 9510, if you want to go find out more about it on our website. And really what it does is it charges developers additional fees, when they develop in a way that encourages more vehicle traffic. Those fees are then turned around 100% into grant programs. It could be something small like a lawnmower exchange program where you're trading out a gas-powered lawnmower for electric. It could be something large like helping retrofit school buses. We had actually a fleet of school buses here in the Valley that was, some of them were put into operation in the 70s, and they were incredibly dirty. So we do go after those developers and those developments where they're not doing it in a very air-friendly way. And I know certain communities have also incentivized, and the city of Fresno is looking at it, I believe this week, not giving tax breaks to folks who want to develop on the fringes of town, but actually if you're doing infill development or you're developing downtown, then you have fewer fees to pay. So there are things being done around the Valley to really encourage good development, encourage folks that are trying to do the right thing. And I'm pleased that there actually are some folks who are looking to develop in a way that doesn't, you know, the last thing we want is more people traveling in single occupancy vehicles. There's a whole variety of health problems that come with that, not just air pollution.
But, you know, when you talk about this, it is something that the individual, whether it's us at home with our fireplaces, whether it's a corporation, whether it's a developer, you know, taking a stand one way or the other, instead of, you know, looking at the bottom line, yeah. You know, and if they say, you know, this is where I want to build, people want to live here, so I'm going to build, I'll just pay the fee and what about my business?
That's the key. You know, developers wouldn't build on the fringes of town if they weren't selling those homes. And I think that's really where we need to continue to educate people. Is there a better option? Will you have a better quality of life if you are living in a place where you don't have to get in your car 5-6 times a day? And that's really what we're trying to do.
Okay. Do we have Laura on line 3?
I actually have a point. I feel that having this discussion on Valley Public Radio in English is a little bit like preaching to the choir, because the demographics of the people who listen to public radio are people who know everything, or at least are familiar with everything that your guests are mentioning. What would be better is to have this discussion in Spanish, or it in Vietnamese. I live in the tower, and it is, I think, in terms of the wood burning, a cultural thing as well as a economic thing. There are people who burn fires during the winter because it's cheaper than raising their gas levels for heating or for, say, investing in their home so that it's much more airtight. And it would be a great service to the general community if this kind of discussion could be put out there in different communities.
And actually that happens. It's funny, Juanita and I were just talking before the program began about Spanish-speaking folks. We have I have a team of Spanish-speaking individuals who work with me, and the station down in the tower, we go on that station periodically, the one that has a sister in the Bay Area, and we work quite closely. You know, we have one of the largest you know, our largest television station in the valley is actually Spanish-speaking television, and both Hmong and Punjabi are two languages that are spoken quite frequently around here. But that's not to say that the folks who listen to Valley Public Radio don't also benefit from this message. And I agree with you 100%. I think one of the things is that this is an audience that is receptive to the messages that we have. And, you know, I want to thank them. I know a lot of Valley Public Radio listeners that really do advocate for clean air in the valley. And I want to remind them, though, there are also folks who sometimes think that the health impacts of air pollution are maybe not getting to them directly, because maybe they're not someone with asthma, or they're not, you know, they don't have kids, or they're not an older person. And I do want to tell people that when we have poor air quality, it is really poor air quality, and everyone, even if they're a healthy adult, should take that into consideration and should be limiting their outdoor activity. So, you know, not all Valley Public listeners, Valley Public Radio listeners, you know, are maybe hearing this for the 100th time. So hopefully there's some people out there that will check our website and will pay attention to when air quality is poor and plan accordingly.
Right. And Dr. Gassman, I would assume it really doesn't, you know, I don't have asthma. But, you know, somebody in my family does, and there are a lot of other people do. But, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, I can end up with a heart condition. So, I mean, it does impact all of us, and people shouldn't think that, oh, I'm feeling okay now, so it doesn't impact me.
You're very correct. There are many, many people that have, excuse me, a chronic cough that I call valley air lung. They don't have diagnosed asthma, but they cough all the time, and it might be seasonal, it might be perennial, and it usually starts after you start living here. I have patients that have never smoked a cigarette that have severe chronic obstructive lung disease by the documented test we do called pulmonary function test, and it's because of a couple of decades of living in this air quality in a susceptible genetic petri dish in their case. So the healthy individuals absolutely can have day-to-day, for example, cough and shortness of breath, chest tightness symptoms, as well as long-term effects like the development of chronic obstructive lung disease.
Okay, we have Tora from Hanford.
Hello. I'm someone who does suffer from asthma. I have moderate asthma as well as COPD and a little bit of emphysema from living in the valley and unrelated to allergies. So this has been a real difficult winter for me. So I really have a lot of concerns, and one of them is the conservative agenda that criticizes regulation and lumps all regulation, including air regulation, together and labels it, describes it as a negative, in negative terms. And then the other one is a friend was talking to me. He substitutes for Hanford Elementary and was talking about how Hanford Elementary calls a number and announces to the teachers on an hourly basis whether there's an orange alert or a red alert, and on Friday it went from orange to red off and on all day. So when it's a red alert, the kids can't go outside and play. So I thought, well, I have an iPhone, I'm going to go online and I'm going to see if I can, or to my app store and see if I can download an app. And what I found was there is an app, but it's for the Sacramento Air Resources Board. And so I was wondering if at some point in the future it wouldn't be possible for the Fresno Air Resources Board or the San Joaquin Valley to develop an app that lists the daily air quality and the particulate and pollen and mold that the air has in it.
You've got it. We are working on one. It is in development, and our goal is to make it something. It's not out there yet, actually, and I have a meeting this week with our programming team and some of the folks that we're working with the smartphone, Apple phone folks, to move it forward. I'm hoping we're getting pretty close to sending it off for approval. But we do have one in the works that is very specific for the Valley Air District.
Furthermore, the Valley Air District will email you the air quality report each day. And I found an app on the Android market where you put in your zip code and it'll give you today and tomorrow's predicted air quality.
And that the online system, we have both a daily forecast that you can sign up for, and then what the school gets right now, we can send you an email as the air quality improves or degrades over the course of the day. So that's it's called our real-time air advisory network. But you're right. Right now, it is not set up as an app. It just goes to your email. Our goal is to turn it into an app. But right now, if you happen to have one of those smartphones where you get your email, you know, nonstop throughout the day, you can sign up for the Real-Time Air Advisory Network. We call it RAN for short.
Okay, we're going to take our last call. James from Bakersfield.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I work out quite a lot, do a lot of cardio. And what I'm wondering is when they say work out inside a gym, does that really help?
It does. You're if you're working out inside, there's and I in another hopefully the gym, and you might even ask them, and in your home, there's air filters on most of your HVAC systems, and those need to be cleaned. Folks say, and the package may say, every 2 to 3 months. I clean mine monthly here in the Valley, just because it is filtering out pollution that is coming into your home or into the health facility. But we have so much pollution that it's dealing with that those usually need to be swapped out more often than maybe the manufacturer wants you to be swapping them out. So I would have that conversation with them and make sure that they're managing their internal air quality in a way that is protecting your health. I don't know if the doctor has anything to add to that, but it is better than just running around in your neighborhood, especially if it's on an evening and everyone in there, you know, everyone's burning illegally. That can be something that you might even go home and feel it. You may have trouble breathing.
And I would agree. The air obviously comes into the building, but in a big building like a health club that's going to have a HVAC unit to keep the sweaty bodies from overheating and stinking up the place, you will have a filtration of the air that'll make it better quality.
Okay.
And it's important to get the highest efficiency filters also, and to watch those air pollution readings and make sure if you are exercising outdoors that you're picking the times of day with the lowest levels of pollution.
Okay. Well, thank you all. That was Bonnie Holmes, Jim with the American Lung Association. Unfortunately, we can see this is a very important topic for a lot of people because it impacts every single one of us. And I think we all agree that there's something more we can probably all do, and we probably all need to work towards a better way of cleaning up our air. So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us to discuss this important topic. Jamie Holt with the Valley Air Pollution Control District, Bonnie Holmes, Jen, the American Lung Association, and Dr. John Gassman with Kaiser Permanente. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Anita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. In May of 2010, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger announced the groundbreaking ceremonies of two new veterans' homes in California. One was in Fresno, the other in Redding. The Fresno veterans' home is almost finished being built. But because of California's budget crisis, the operational funding has been taken out of the 2012-2013 budget. Tracy Sharman has this report on local efforts to open the Fresno Veterans Home.
There's been a battle going on in Fresno for the last decade, a battle that has both Republicans and Democrats fighting on the same side, all in hopes of opening the doors to a Fresno Veterans Home that is on track to be finished this spring. The construction will be completed on time, but in trying to close California's huge budget gap, Governor Brown cut the $14.5 million needed to operate the facility from his proposed budget. Earlier this month, the governor spoke about some of the other proposed cuts.
We're cutting welfare by almost $1.5 billion. A mother and kids are getting the same welfare check in real dollars that they got in the 80s. Same for the elderly, the blind, the disabled, the child care cuts. This is not nice stuff. But that's what it takes to balance the budget, and that's assuming we get our tax revenues.
The governor's choice to cut the funding of the Fresno Veterans Home and let it remain unhoused doesn't sit right with local veterans advocate Gordon Pickett. He's a Naval Academy graduate who, after serving in the Navy for 26 years, is considered 100% disabled.
They got the money. It's just a matter of priorities, what they want to spend it on. And I think, you know, the governor, he's holding the veterans hostage to get his tax increases. And we've been promised, he made statements that, oh, it's unconscionable, we really need to open the home and all, and it was supposed to be in this year's budget.
Just this last Veterans Day, Governor Brown made the following address to Californians.
We honor their work, their sacrifice, and yes, we honor what they are today. And we don't forget that veterans after war also need things, and this society should not forget them. So on this Veterans Day, let's remember the sacrifice, but let us also rededicate ourselves to making sure our veterans have the education, the health, and the jobs that they, like other Americans, richly deserve.
With this in mind, Assemblymember Henry Perea stood before a group of veterans in downtown Fresno last Friday, making the following pledge.
I will be proposing a list of alternative cuts to the governor's office that he can make so that $20 million can be restored, so our veterans' home can open on time, on schedule, and so that all of these veterans behind us and those future veterans can have the access to the care that they desperately need.
More than 30,000 veterans will be returning to California after the most recent wars, according to the Military Times. The Fresno Veterans Hospital already has 28,000 veterans enrolled and eligible to receive medical services. And although the hospital is expanding, veterans groups say we need more. Pickett says local veterans need a place to recuperate and to live. And since the Fresno Veterans Home has been built already...
It's idiocy not to open the home. You build a $167 million 27-acre facility, and you can't just leave it sitting out there. It'll be just like some of the homes where the mortgages haven't been paid, and they'll be trashed. It'll be trashed. Even the small force that they have planned to have for security and maintenance and so forth, that isn't going to handle it.
When opened, the Fresno Veterans Home will offer medical care and residency for 300 Central Valley veterans. Assemblymember Perea says the community needs this home opened.
I've been involved with this project for the last 9 years, and to see the legs get cut out from underneath them at the very last minute is very disheartening. And that's why today we did this news conference as a call to action. We're asking veterans, their families, and our entire community to rally around this home, because not only do the veterans need the care, but we're talking about 450 new jobs in the Central Valley that will be created once this home opens.
Veteran Daniel M. Hernandez came out to sign Perea's petition to Governor Brown. He's proud of his 35 years of military service and plans to reside in the Fresno Veterans Home when it opens.
We're all going to fight for this if it takes the last breath I got, man.
The Department of Veterans Affairs has been fully funded by the Obama administration, receiving almost $110 billion in 2010. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Eric Shinseki addressed Congress in 2010 about his concerns.
Veterans are disproportionately amongst our homeless, amongst our depressed, amongst our substance abusers, amongst our jobless.
The VA will make $100 million available in grants this year to help prevent veterans from homelessness. But whether some of that money can be used to operate the Fresno Veterans Home remains unknown. For now, Assemblymembers Perea and Linda Halderman have each started letter-writing campaigns urging the governor to reconsider funding the Fresno Veterans Home. For Valley Public Radio, I'm Tracy Sharman.
And we also talked to Fresno Assemblywoman Linda Halderman, who has joined forces with Perea in an effort to get the governor to restore the funding needed to open the facilities. It is estimated that it would take about $14.5 million to open the Fresno home a year from now. And Assemblywoman Halderman believes the money should be included in the budget. Thank you very much, Assemblywoman Halderman, for joining us this morning to discuss this issue. We appreciate having you.
Well, thank you. This issue means a lot to me, so thanks very much for being interested.
Let's start with the assembly. When were you all aware that the governor was going to take the funds to open the Fresno Veterans Home out of the budget?
Last Thursday, the governor released his budget, and that was a preliminary budget that will then be negotiated, and there will be another one in May called a May revise. But what was particularly important to those of us looking at veterans issues is the fact that in the governor's first budget last Thursday,
He entirely omitted the promised funding so that the veterans' homes in both Fresno and Redding could open. Now, this was the funding that was so contentious last year. And at that time, the promise was that there would only be about a six-month delay. And what we learn now is that because this funding is omitted the second year in a row, we're going to need to add an additional year delay so that while the construction is finished, because most of that has already been federal and it's already done, the buildings themselves will stand open and we will be paying hundreds of thousands of dollars just for security guards so the buildings themselves don't get vandalized.
Now, I know there are many who question the wisdom of that, that you build the facility, but then you spend, I think I read somewhere, over $1 million just for them to sit vacant.
Absolutely. You need security guards. You can't take a chance that maintenance is not upkept. Otherwise, the building simply decays. I think that is just a tragedy, because what we could be doing at the same time is hiring 400 people. We could be admitting veterans and keeping the promise we made to them that they're going to have a veterans home somewhere north of Los Angeles. Currently, there's only one. It's in Yountville. All of us in the valley are left with nowhere to keep the people that have served us and that now need our help.
Do you think that this could still be included in the budget? As you mentioned, this is just the initial budget. We know budgets go through a lot of refis before you get the final one. Mm-hmm. Do you think there is an opportunity there to get the money reinstated?
Absolutely. And what it will take is the governor understanding what our priorities are in Central California. We need to contact the governor. We need to put pressure on the people who negotiate the budget, and that includes the majority leader in both the Assembly and the Senate and the governor himself, so that he understands this truly is a priority in the Central Valley.
Now, I understand you and also Assemblymember Perea, you all have launched a drive, really, just to get people in this area to understand the importance of this.
Yes, in cooperation with the local veterans groups that are connected across the states, we're working so that those letters get sent and the governor does hear us loud and clear.
Now, let's get back to the whole situation with the veterans home. When it's open, how many people is it set to serve, and the possibility of the number of people who could actually be hired and thus creating jobs in the area?
We're talking about 400 skilled jobs, 400 good-paying jobs in a county with an unemployment rate that when it's below 17%, we start bragging about it. These jobs are a lot more than just the promise to the veterans. These are the jobs that we need to recover our valley economy. And it's unconscionable to me that of all the promises to break, this is the one that was chosen.
Now, when you talk about the effort to get the governor to include this in his budget, and the governor is saying not just the veterans home, but a lot of other agencies are looking at very, very deep cuts, including education. And the governor is asking for the people of California to include an increase in taxes. If people were to do that, would that for sure kind of guarantee that the veterans home would have the money to open?
Absolutely not. The governor's tax increase does not assure education adequate funding. And in fact, what we're noticing now is that state revenues are increasing despite the tax decrease. Remember, the personal income tax expired. We did not extend the VLF. We did not extend the half-cent sales tax. And yet, we found that our state receipts are higher in those areas. We are showing a slow economic recovery. What the governor wants those revenues for is to increase spending in other areas, in areas of welfare, in areas of state workers. That's not, in my view, the first priority of our state legislature.
Is there any kind of feeling or belief among some of the legislators that cutting funding for the veterans home, cutting funding for education, is any kind of a bargaining tool to try to get some other things in the budget, perhaps?
I have no idea, because I am not one of the people consulted to negotiate the budget. All I can do is represent my constituency and make sure that their priorities are heard loud and clear in Sacramento. I have no idea what goes on behind closed doors, and that is part of the problem with our budget negotiations. They are done in the dark, often in the middle of the night, with very little input and certainly no public hearings. That's wrong.
And in a situation with this proposed cut, you all didn't learn about it at all until you saw it in the proposed budget.
No, we learned about it this year when the governor accidentally released the budget online 4 days before it was intended to be released. We learned about it last year in the 11th hour in the middle of the night as we were voting on the budget that, in fact, a staff member had made a recommendation and omitted that funding entirely. That's all the public hearing it got, and essentially that's nothing.
But you say that you then are hopeful that the funding for the veterans' home could be included in the final budget. You think the public can have a say in this matter?
Absolutely. That is the whole point of a representative republic, is the fact that we have the ability to influence our representatives. Representatives work for us as voters, not the other way around. And so if the governor understands how important this particular issue is to those of us in the Valley, it is much more likely that he would include that funding. And I would commend any of the local legislators who get on board, regardless of whether they're city or state or federal, whether they're Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. Anyone who gets on board with this, I think it's doing the right thing.
So what are you asking the public to do?
Contact the governor. Contact your local legislators to make sure that they're on board. If I represent you, you know I'm on board. But continue to send letters to the governor. And you can go to my website. You can go to your own representative's website and communicate how important that is to you.
And this is an issue, too, that has bipartisan support from what I've read.
Certainly. This is not a partisan issue by any stretch. People from all political parties and those who are not even affiliated serve our armed forces, and they should not be penalized because of these budget games.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Assemblywoman Halderman, for joining us to discuss this important issue.
Thank you so much, Juanita. I appreciate it.
And joining us now is Charlie Waters, who is also a veteran, and he's a veterans advocate. Charlie, you have been in this fight for a long, long time. And how did you feel when you learned that the governor did not include funding to operate the veterans' home in the budget?
Well, not real well, because, you know, the length of time is, this is 11th year, and since the inception, and we... you know, as they call it, the stomach sinks, you know, when you hear news like this. He finds money to do the things that he wants to do, you know, like this this high-speed thing with millions and millions already and more millions going in. And he's got to take care of business at hand. He's got to take care of what's here and now. And so naturally, I'm very upset. And I'm the sitting president of the Veterans Home Foundation, which started this whole thing 11 years ago. And we're just not happy campers. He didn't fulfill his promise. He hasn't fulfilled the promise of the other governors that were involved in this. He owes it to the veterans. You know, it's easy for them to say, well, we just don't have the money. They may not have the money, but they have the millions and millions to give to this train dream, which will be a diesel train to start, which pollutes everything more. But, you know, there's 400 employees that would be hired in our area here to run the facility,
and Charlie,
300 veterans that would be in it. And that's... That is for sure, you know.
How big of a need do we have here in the Fresno area for that veterans home?
Well, we have a need. The purpose of the veteran home being here is There's veteran homes to the north. There's a veteran homes to the south. There's nothing here. They expect our veterans to leave home, to live away from their friends and family for the rest of their lives. And that's the purpose of having a veteran's home in different sections of the state. Now, they'll give the lame excuse very easily to us, and they've told me many times, oh, there's just not that many people that would move in. Well, you go to the VA hospital down here and ask any of those guys getting out of the hospital that are going home for home care, with their wives, by the way, are getting are aging too, and they'll tell you, well, I applied, but I never heard anything back. So I don't put a lot of weight on their. That's a pretty lame excuse. We're having a write-in of veterans whom have applied and veterans who would move there into the home, and it's going to be several hundred more than the space that we've got available. So I think they're weak-kneed, lame people at the in the state VA. The Undersecretary Umberg is helping us all she can do, but I want some better, more realistic response from the secretary. We have to have a secretary of the VA that fights for the veterans, that fights for our rights, fights for the things that we need other than tiptoeing around with the governor and carrying on a political agenda. I just don't buy that.
And so the effort right now is a letter-writing campaign and to try to put pressure on the governor's office to let him know just how important this is.
Precisely. They had an aide to the speaker who is not even a veteran. He's the veteran's advisor, not even a veteran, telling me that, Charlie, how about the poor children in the streets starving? How about the elderly with no homes out starving? Well, we're doing the best. You know, we can't take care of the world. We're doing the best we can. And I simply say to them, they've got lobbyists that are getting tons of money. Let them fight for their constituents, too, like I'm fighting for my veterans.
Okay. Well, Charlie, thanks so much for calling in and joining us this morning. We appreciate your call, and we'll continue to follow this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Up next, how a statewide program is saving homeowners money on their energy bills and helping to provide local jobs. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. Most homeowners would like to save on their energy bill. Well, there is a program that can help people do just that. Here to discuss just how is Colin Clark. He's Senior Program Manager with Energy Upgrade California. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Juanita.
First of all, tell us a little bit more about Energy Upgrade California.
The Energy Upgrade California is a program that saves property owners money by providing them with the resources to make their homes more comfortable, more safe, and more efficient, while at the same time putting Californians back to work.
Now, as a homeowner, are there certain requirements to qualify?
All homeowners qualify. All property owner, or homeowners do qualify. And if they are interested in finding a contractor who can help them through the process, I would suggest that they go to the website, which is www.energyupgradeca.org.
Well, and you talk about helping them with energy upgrades. What kind of help do they get?
The Energy Upgrade California program is a collaboration between local and state government, the private sector, and the investor-owned utilities, and it really accomplishes those goals by supporting property owners with rebates and technical assistance so that they can learn about what energy efficiency upgrades they can do to their homes, and then also by providing technical support to contractors.
Now, I understand what makes this program a little different is that it promotes what is called a whole-house approach to home efficiency.
The idea is that if you added up all the little nooks and crannies in your average California home, around the windows and in the attic, the average home would have a hole in their wall the size of a hula hoop. And so the Energy Upgrade California program really does focus on that whole home approach. I mean, we've trained contractors to go out and do some diagnostic tests on your home and then prescribe to you a set of measures that are specific to your home that will address those nooks and crannies and also the inefficiencies in the system, such as your heater or your air conditioner.
What kind of rebates are out there? Is PG&E still providing rebates, and are there other agencies also providing rebates?
The base rebates are provided by the utility, so PG&E is providing from $1,000 up to $4,000 for a property owner. And then the cities and counties across the state, Fresno included, are offering extra rebates on top of that $4,000. And again, if property owners are interested, they can go to the website, energyupgradeca.org, and find out exactly what they qualify for.
Now, let's take an average homeowner. How might something like this, how much would something like an energy upgrade maybe cost them, and how much, if they're able to get all the rebates, how much can they take off that cost?
The average property owner is seeing that their costs are running around $12,000 or $13,000, and that the average rebate is around $3,000. So that $13,000 is before the rebate. That means that after the rebate, the average property owner is seeing a cost of around $10,000, and they're seeing an average energy savings of close to 30%. So that early, that front-end investment really does pay off in just a handful of years.
Tell us a little bit about how does this create jobs here?
The Energy Upgrade California program is focused on training contractors to be able to do these energy efficiency upgrades and approach the house in that whole house fashion that we discussed a little bit earlier. The state has put together a subsidized contractor training program where contractors can get a $1,600 training for only $130, and they get an extra certification that enrolls them in this program. And if contractors are interested in that, they can find the information on the website. The investor-owned utilities in PG&E have also made a great effort to provide free training to contractors to teach them about this program and to give them tips about how to sell this program to their clients.
And there's going to be an event here locally tomorrow where I think we have a family who's gone through this whole upgrade process.
Correct. The Energy Upgrade California team will be in Fresno tomorrow. We'll be providing an opportunity for local government officials as well as the press to walk through a home that has been upgraded, take a look at the different features and measures that were installed, hear from the family what their process was and how happy they are with the home. That event's not open to the public, but if property owners are interested, there's an event next Thursday, January 26th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Sunnyside Library, where property owners can learn more about the program and can get introduced to some contractors who can help them through the process.
Now, where can people go if there's a website to learn more about Energy Upgrade California?
The website is www.energyupgradeca.org, and on that website, property owners can find out about what rebates they qualify for, what sort of trainings the contractors have gone through, and they can also contact a contractor to help them through the process.
Well, I tell you, here in the Valley, when we have these cold, cold winters and hot, hot summers, everybody's looking to save on their energy bill. Thanks so much, Mr. Clark, for joining
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Juanita. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition, a big discussion today. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions, and you can email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weber, and executive producer Joel Moore, I am Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.